When life ends, when I'm all done with everything that I've got to do, will it turn out that whatever wisdom I prayed for, whatever wisdom I strove to acquire, benefited me more than foolishness would have? What's interesting is that both the wise and the foolish die. And later, generations forget both of them. They lived on the earth, they did wise things or they did foolish things. And what do later generations remember? Well, they just hardly remember them. So, what benefit then does wisdom render? And I know that's taking a negative connotation, yet we know instinctively that wisdom's better than foolishness. We just know that it is. But why? Well, for those of you who may be visiting today, I'm preaching through a book of the Bible called the Book of Ecclesiastes, written by King Solomon, who presents himself as a preacher, but he was also a king, a wealthy king, who had great amounts of wisdom and knowledge. And he's using all the resources available to him, both internally and externally, to look for the meaning of life. And so that's what's going on. In this book, he revealed that search for meaning for us. By being a philosopher, back in chapter 1, verses 12 through 14, we notice how he spoke about just looking at the big picture. What is the big picture of life? And what does it teach us? Also, by being a student, acquiring all the wisdom and knowledge that he was able to receive. God even had approached him and asked him what he wanted, and he asked for understanding or wisdom. But he also just increased in that and grew in that wisdom and knowledge. But just like the philosophical approach, he found that didn't tell him the meaning of life either. So he thought, well, let's try the party animal part. We saw that last week in chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. And if the serious approach to life doesn't reveal why we're here, then let's go to the other side. Let's just laugh and have fun and do all that stuff. Maybe that'll tell me why I'm on this planet. But that didn't work either. So next in verse 3 of chapter 2, he told us that he was a connoisseur of wine. Maybe just devoting himself to looking at some of the finer qualities of life would reveal our purpose for being here. And just like the other things, that did not work as well. So he then thought, well, let's be a diligent worker and let's acquire as much as I can, and I'm going to just seek pleasure. I'm going to build things, and whatever pleasure that brings to me, maybe that will tell me my purpose in life. But as we saw in chapter 2, verses 4 through 11, he said, that's all vanity too. That's all vanity. So now we move into chapter 2, verses 12 through 16. Where we're going to ask the question, is wisdom better than foolishness? And look why he would present that question and why I'm asking that question. Here's what he said. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? In other words, who succeeds him? Only what he has already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head. In other words, where they should be. But the fool walks in darkness because he doesn't have his eyes in his head. He's got them someplace else. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, that also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. They both get cancer. They both get hit by cars as they're crossing the street. They both die of old age. The same thing happens to all of them. Well, you remember that Solomon had considered wisdom, madness, and folly earlier, and then he went to pleasure, as I pointed out earlier, and he found that that was in vain. So he went back to comparing wisdom with madness and folly, still believing that wisdom held the key, or that wisdom would guide him to finding the purpose of life. And he would do that by contrasting wisdom with madness and folly. How does that help? Well, in the same way that you go to the jeweler and say, I'd like to buy a diamond. The jeweler does not take the diamond and set it on the glass countertop. There's no contrast. The jeweler will get out, you know, black or dark blue piece of cloth, you know, something that provide contrast. And wisdom's the same way. Sometimes we can't see the value of wisdom or even see what the wise choice is until we look at the other side. Oh, this is what folly would do. Now I see the value of wisdom. And that's what Solomon said that he wanted to do. In verse 12, you'll notice that he thought of his successor, realizing that whoever followed him as king could only do what Solomon himself had already done. And that made me wonder, did Solomon only do what was already done before him? And I thought further, well, what about us? Does that mean that really, when it comes down to it, I'm only trying the things that have been tried before me? In verse 13, Solomon made the observation that to the extent that light excels darkness, so wisdom excels folly. That's obvious. Because, verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head. He knows about life. He thinks. He ponders. He considers. Have you met people who just don't seem to think? Well, that's the fool. And so he's walking in darkness. It's as though he doesn't realize the things that he does and their consequences. So Solomon says, the wise man's not that way. He considers, if I do this, what are the ramifications? And he knows of the ultimate event that is yet coming to all mankind. Whereas the fool walks in darkness, he just doesn't understand life. He doesn't understand what life is all about. And he lives without any thought that someday he's going to have to give an account to God. In verse 14, though, Solomon's thinking, okay, here's why wisdom is so much better. Yet, the same event happens to the wise and to the fool. If wisdom excels folly, just as light excels darkness, why is it that wisdom cannot help us to avoid death? How much wisdom did God give to Solomon? Well, read the book of Ecclesiastes, read the book of Proverbs, read the Song of Solomon. You'll see how wise he was. And guess what? He died a long time ago. Wisdom did not prevent his death. So then in verse 15, he's wondering, what good is wisdom if the wise, his life ends the same as the fool? Again, I know wisdom's better, and yet somehow, both of us can die in our sleep or die a horrible death or whatever. There seems to be no distinction. So again, he said it appears that wisdom is vanity. In verse 16, he's asking the question, are the wise people of past generations remembered more than the foolish ones? Well, no, not really. We forget both of them. Except for the very few who managed to make it into history. And how few they are in comparison to the billions that have walked this earth. Or are walking it now. I mean, think about it. Just like look in your own family. How much do you know about your own great, great grandparents? How much do you know about them? Now, I suppose there's probably somebody here who says, oh, man, I can give you a whole book on it. Okay, let's add a third grade on there. You know, I can keep on going. Well, why don't you remember them? Was your grandfather a very wise man? How come his wisdom hasn't been passed down and you're not just reading the way he lived life? Or maybe it was the other way. He was a fool. How come we're not learning? We forget these people. That's what Solomon teaches us in verse 16. We forget both the wise and the foolish. So, you know, what is that all about? Why does God put us on this earth only to be forgotten? We work and we work. We gain wisdom and knowledge. We do so much. We have pleasures and we have sorrow, and then we're gone, and before you know it, even our own family forgets us. And Solomon's whole point is, the testimony of that, the thing that establishes that is that death takes care of both of them. So then, what did he start thinking about life? Look what he now says in verse 17. Therefore, I hated life. Because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. For all is vanity and grasping for the wind. The fact that all work done under the sun really comes down to nothing more than vanity and grasping for the wind. Solomon said that distressed him. Knowing that all his wisdom displayed in all his work ended up not benefiting him. Therefore, Solomon hated life. And he hated it because of its inequities. In other words, life isn't fair. Why is it that the wise man dies just like the fool? That's not right in his thinking. And also he hated life because of its harshness. Life is harsh and brutal to all people, regardless of the way you've lived. Look at Jesus Christ. Okay, now there's one who exceeded Solomon in wisdom. And Jesus never saw his 34th birthday. And how many other people have died a young death? Life is harsh and brutal. So Solomon just said there in verse 17, he hated life. That's not all he hated. In verses 18 to 21, he says he hated labor. Then I hated all my labor in which I have toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Now he's speaking about his own son, Rehoboam, in this case. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also was vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil or a great misfortune. Okay, so in verse 18, King Solomon, the preacher, thought more on his work, realizing that everything he had done, just like us, we have to leave to the one who's coming after us. And that doesn't always just happen in death. I mean, maybe you've worked at a job for 30 or 40 or more years, and you've got things set up. You made things efficient. You made things the best way they could. And now you're going to retire and someone else is going to come in. And they haven't labored for all that you've labored. They've not used all the wisdom, knowledge, and skill you have. What are they going to do with what you've done? And so in verse 19, Solomon wondered, you know, what kind of man will he be? Will the man who follows me be wise or will he be a fool? And again, I remind you, he's talking about his own son, Rehoboam, here, who became king when he was 41 years old, when his father had died. And I believe that the book of Proverbs shows Solomon training his son, Rehoboam. It's written primarily by Solomon, and so often he says, "My son, keep my commandments," or things of that nature. And so the question is, would that son heed all that wisdom that had been poured out upon his life for over four decades? He would rule over all that Solomon had set up. And in verse 20, Solomon said, you know, that sent him to despair, making him realize again that everything he did was vanity, or at least could be vanity, if the man who immediately succeeded him began to tear everything down or didn't know how to run things the way he had run them. Therefore, training people and our relationships in life has to take precedence over the things that we do. I mean, look at Jesus. What did he give himself to? Building things or building men? Solomon labored and toiled to establish everything he did. But in verse 21, he says that he used wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then leave it all to this man who had not labored to build the homes, to set up the gardens and the watering system and all that stuff that he had mentioned earlier in chapter 2. And whatever a king does to set up his kingdom, the one who came in wouldn't have all that. But again, we could say the same thing about Solomon. Someone before him had done many of those things. What would Solomon do? Well, it seems like Solomon improved upon what he had inherited. Would his successor improve upon those things? Or would he ruin them? Solomon concluded that this also was vanity, but this time he added something different. Did you notice that? Not only is it vanity, not only is it grasping for the wind, but he also said, this is a great evil or a great misfortune. Well, he had more to say. Verses 22 and 23, you know, what can we show for all our labor? For what has man for all his labor and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. So what do we have for all our labor? And obviously Solomon here is not saying, well, this is what I have. Look at all these things I've built. He's not talking about that. He's talking about something deeper. When it comes down to life, what does it have? How did doing all these other things bring meaning into my life? How did it fulfill my purpose? What do we have for all that occupies our hearts? I mean, you know about that. You may go to work and a problem arises that day. And whether you get it solved or not, you go home and now your body's away from work, but guess what? You still think about it. And if the problem was bad enough, you go to bed at night, and what happens? You get up at 2:30 in the morning. First thing that pops into your mind, or maybe it's the thing that woke you up, you're not sure which, is this problem earlier. And Solomon went through that experience. And he says, what was all that about? What is all that for? You work during the day, but your heart keeps going at night. So what do we accomplish? And again, he said, it's all vanity. So watch now how he concludes this section. He tells us to enjoy life. I mean, so far, it sounds like he's been pretty negative. In fact, he says, I hated life and I hated my work. Now watch what he says. Verses 24 to 26. Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? Or some of your translations might say that, you know, apart from him, apart from God, who can have, you know, this eating and enjoyment? Verse 26. For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Well, interestingly, Solomon obviously has taken quite a turn at this point. This is really the first time we've seen him do this in the book of Ecclesiastes. And just considering what we've looked at this morning, it almost seems like there's a change in attitude there. He declares that there's nothing better for us than that we should eat and drink and that our souls should enjoy good in our labor. And why is that? Well, he's saying God's the one who gives that to us. God wants us to eat and drink. I mean, God's the one who made our stomachs and made our mouths and everything that goes on in there to be able to enjoy the food and to drink. He wants us to labor. He wants us to work. So I hope that no one so far in these sermons on Ecclesiastes have thought, okay, I've got a good reason for kicking back and not working anymore and letting the government take care of me. Oh, no. Don't get that from Solomon. He's not about to tell you that. And also, God is the one who wants us to enjoy good in our labor. This is all from God. And the believer knows that God has given us all things to enjoy. And the believer knows that God can give us tomorrow what He's given today. So in other words, the believer is not a miser, and he doesn't. Solomon's not encouraging us to be a miser. Enjoy life. Enjoy it. Just don't make more out of it than what we should. Now, according to verse 25, Solomon says that he had the capacity to enjoy all things. Therefore, let us learn from him. Do I have to experience what he experienced before I can learn? You know, sometimes we get like that. We don't learn from others. We have to go through it ourselves. Well, do I have to commit a crime and see the punishment that comes from that before I know it's not a good idea to commit that crime? No, generally speaking, we learn from others. And that's the same thing that's going on here. And perhaps we should thank God that we've only got what we have. Why did God give Solomon all that wisdom and knowledge and all that wealth and not the same to us? Because we don't have to have as much as he had. He had it all, went through the experiences of looking for the meaning and purpose of life, and told us it's in none of those gifts that God gives. It's in something else. And I can read his journey that he took through life and discover what that thing is. And so I should really thank God that God's given me, again, what I have in life. In verse 26, look what he says God does. He gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to a man who is good in his sight. Whereas the work of gathering and collecting God gives to the sinner, that he may do those things for the good man. Now, that doesn't mean the sinner doesn't enjoy the benefit of the gathering and the collecting. Well, then what did Solomon mean? I think he meant this. Why do we have all these people in this world and all the work that they're doing and all the things they've invented and all the products and education, all that stuff that they make available? Why are they doing that? Well, according to this passage, it's for God's people. Okay, so here's 6 billion plus people out there in the world, and then there's God's people scattered, you know, among that. And all these 6 billion plus people, they're doing all kinds of things. They're growing food, they're making cars, they're making computers, they're building homes, all those things. And why are they doing all that stuff? So that the few people scattered among them, who are the good people, it's for their benefit. And of course, the sinner enjoys those things as well. So it got me to wondering, if the good people that Solomon's talking about here did not exist on the earth, would there be any gathering and collecting? Well, I think from what I'm seeing in this passage, I would say no. And I'd like to go a little bit further and say, since the principalities, the powers, the rulers of the darkness of this age and the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places are doing all they can to silence God in America, does that explain not only America's but the world's current economic troubles? Could that be part of it? In other words, the secular world is troubling God and His people, so He is troubling the secularists. And granted, we live among them, so that's going to affect us too. Oh, I just wish the world could hear this and see that it's not a good thing to fight against God. But then at the end of verse 26, Solomon said, well, but really all of this is vanity and grasping for the wind. So, let us not complain over what we do not have, but let us enjoy what God gives. What do I have? Whether you're talking about wisdom or material things, I have it because God's given that to me. I will use it and I'll rejoice in it. And what is the point in all that we do? You know, we're going to die anyways. Who will remember us and who will remember what we've done? In time, it'll be forgotten. Except by one. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 58, Paul assured us that what we're doing is not in vain. Listen to this. Therefore, my beloved brethren, Paul said, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And Paul said that because he was teaching on the resurrection. This life is not all there is to it. There's something else coming. And then in 1 John 2, verse 17, the way of the world and the way of those who follow God's will is strongly contrasted. And here's what it says. And the world is passing away and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So this would mean then that what I do has to be in the Lord. And if I'm in the Lord, I will last forever. The key then is to be in the Lord. So let me ask you this morning, are you in the Lord? Can you say, yes, Jesus Christ is my Lord, therefore I'm a Christian? And if not, oh, let me please urge you, don't let your life end in vanity. Let it all count for something by becoming a Christian today. If you're ready to become a Christian today, if you know what to do, if you believe in your heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and you're ready to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins, we'll take care of that this morning. Just come forward now as we stand and sing.